Welcome back to Real Talk HCS here with David Carroll, who is back for second hosting episode. David, appreciate you being here with us.
An encore performance today. Glad to be here. Let's get it started.
Yep.
Tyner, I got a message last night or this morning about some new security measures for athletic events. That's been a hot topic the last couple of weeks since there was one football game that was canceled and another that had to be interrupted due to some disruptions. In this wacky world we live in 2025, is this – when I say the Tyner situation, they're going to be requiring some ID verification, clear bags, that sort of thing, kind of thing that has been in effect in some cases for pro and college events. Is this where we're headed?
It is, and we're working towards, as a district, a standard set of expectations. I don't know that it will go to the length of what Tyner is doing for this week and going into weeks ahead. So what we're trying to create is an environment where our school communities, kids that go to our schools, can enjoy the games and go there and feel safe. And so we are going to put in some stricter expectations around unaccompanied minors, entrance procedures. In Tyner's message that went out, talked about using handheld wands for metal detection. That most likely will be a standard expectation across the district. And so just really trying to tighten up those procedures so that we can have games, not just football games, but basketball games, wrestling matches that people can enjoy.
It just seems like, I think back to watching movies about the old West when, outlaws would choose the town square to settle their old scores. For some reason, high school sporting events have become that arena, and it's so sad to see.
It is. I think it's a gathering place, right? I mean, it's one of the few places in the city where a lot of people are going to be, and I think a lot of these incidents are happening for viewers. Mm-hmm. And so I think that for that reason. I also want to point back, you talk about the old West. Mm-hmm. This isn't necessarily new. I mean, we had games 30 years ago where coaches were getting arrested on the field.
That's true.
And so it is a concern, one that we are working to address, but also want to make sure that the community understands they have a responsibility in this as well. Their ability to make sure their kids are monitored, to make sure they know where their kids are, is an important part of this.
All right. Another concern that has come up recently, we're celebrating some new facilities. The last time we spoke, it was about Tyner. You recently held a press conference talking about some plans for the new DuPont, which we can touch on. But, I can't bring that up without mentioning the fact that there are still some schools that are lagging behind in terms of modern fixtures and cleanliness and just general building health. I was talking to somebody a few days ago about the Chattanooga School for Arts and Sciences, one of the best schools, not just in Hamilton County, but anywhere. And they had visited there recently for one reason or another, and they were like, my goodness, why haven't they done anything with this building? And some people could say the same thing about the Normal Park schools and a couple others that we could mention. So before we celebrate some of the new ones, where are we on the remaining current schools that need a lot of work?
Yeah, we're still making upgrades, and we have made some upgrades at CSAS. I don't know what part of the building they went to, but we've done some work throughout that building to not only improve lighting, but to improve efficiencies. It's an old building, and there are a lot of people that love those buildings and want to keep kids in those buildings. It is always going to be difficult for us to stay ahead of deferred maintenance. And I've said this a lot. It's because we have too many buildings. But as a community, that's what we're choosing to do. We have made a lot of progress, mostly by taking buildings offline. The biggest buildings that I think about, like right now, is a Barger, right? A Barger, yep. Elementary off of Brainerd Road that we've done some work on the roof to make it better, but it's probably right now that we've gotten CSLA off, we've gotten Tyner off, it's probably the building that has the most need. And of course, we've got a plan to move it to Delwood once Delwood moves to Brainerd, but we're constantly looking at it. We had the $60 million that kind of gave us a booster shot. We've allocated somewhere around, I think, 45 to 50 of it has really addressed a lot of the deferred maintenance. But if you remember back to the ABM report in 2020, that number was $1 billion. For us to really get caught up was $1 billion investment. So although we've made good strides, it's going to continue to be an issue we've got to address.
So let's move up to the current day. A few weeks ago, you made the announcement along with others at DuPont about the eventual combination of DuPont, Rivermont, and Alpine Crest into a new facility on the DuPont property at the North River Y. Just for anybody who may have missed that, what was the news value of that? What, you mentioned some sort of partnership with the Y.
It's the first partnership that we will have in Hamilton County of an elementary school physically and also programmatically connected to a YMCA. There are models like this across the nation. We went to visit two in Louisville last spring to see it for ourselves of elementary schools that, you know, buildings are literally connected to the YMCA and the programs they're doing are connected to the YMCA. I think it's newsworthy, not only because it's something innovative, but it provides a new opportunity for that community, for kids in the school. The example I gave at Louisville is that every third grader gets swimming lessons. That's a big deal. They run after school programming. They have reduced rates for families to be members of the Y so that families can be more healthy. But it also opens up that campus to be an asset in that community like it wouldn't be. The fields on the current site will be open to the community for recreational use. We'll have the ability to partner more with the Y for after school programming. So I think it's newsworthy for a number of reasons. I saw a lot of concerns about safety. Well, yes, of course, we've got a plan for safety. The connection is literally a hallway that connects to the gym, and the entrances are completely separate. But we always are going to have to be concerned about safety. Initially on that property, there are concerns about the traffic flow. Well, this really addresses that in a whole different way because we can use the entire property, have two exits going out the current site. And so there's a lot to be excited about.
The new downtown technical school, for lack of a better term, I think it's more than that. But I see the sign. I think it's Franklin Roberts. That I'm sure has attracted the attention of a lot of downtown motorists as in, you know, what's going on there? How far along are they? What's the latest on that?
We have an architect that is working on the bottom two floors to basically get it ready for partnerships for career and technical education. I hope in the next 2 weeks, we're going to have the first significant announcement in terms of partnerships and programming that will go into that building. It is connected to the other Future Ready centers, though, and in an idea of trying to open up career and technical education to every student in Hamilton County. So it won't be a set-aside school. It'll be a place where kids from Red Bank, from Howard, from Signal Mountain, Lookout Valley, East Ridge can come for half a day and still stay connected to their current school. But we expect in about a week or two for a pretty significant announcement to come in.
And you mentioned the Future Ready Centers. As an outside observer, that seems to me to be a real success story. I don't hear anything negative coming out of any of those places. I hear so many teachers and parents express their thanks that so many different programs and opportunities are available at these locations. I'm in the news media. They tell me I'm delivering bad news every day. I can't find any bad news about that.
It's been really good. And I go to the leadership of people like Tony Donan and Olivia Bagby, but also, the leaders in those schools that have worked with the faculty and the faculty's bought into it. I would go to Future Ready Center of North River where there was a lot of anxiety from the faculty about what this might look like. And they've really bought into it. A really neat stat in North River, the freshman class, which, are coming from, again, multiple different schools, tripled this year compared to where it was last year.
This is what we used to know as Sequoia, correct?
That's right. Okay. That's right. And so we have some kids that are still traditional Sequoia students that were getting to graduation, but moving forward, every kid coming in will be one of those halftime students that is connected to Soddy Daisy, Sell Creek, Hickson, some other schools that is coming to this location for a half day to get that career and technical education.
I've been around long enough to remember when a lot of people wanted to close Sail Creek. Yeah. And I remember when Sail Creek had 20 seniors in a given year. And to sit here in 2025 and look at that school and the vibrancy of it and the need for it, you know, that's got to be a great challenge for anyone involved in school administration. You can't predict the future sometimes.
No, absolutely. And Sail Creek is a hidden gem. Leanne Welch and her team out there have done a tremendous job. It's grown a lot. We did an addition, I think, in 2017 or so that really expanded some opportunities for them. But they're in a place now where they're pretty full. And, you know, if growth continues to go that north part of the county, Sail Creek is going to be an integral part of us being able to provide opportunities for kids.
Every time I go there, I look at whoever's principal at the time and just say, I'm so thankful they didn't close this place because it was this close to happening.
Yeah. Well, and Sequoia was close to closing.
True.
As well back in like 2008, I believe it was, and just combining it straight with Soddy Daisy. So
the folks who thought they could predict the future back then, yeah. Thank goodness they didn't pull the trigger on that. I guess we have to talk about what's the expression, the gorilla in the room. You know, the big story in Hamilton County Schools the past couple of weeks has been the MOU vote on Centerstone, mm-hmm. mental health counseling. Every day there's some new chapter in that, whether it be comments online or comments from board members, people who feel that it's a necessity and are speaking out in one form or another. So where does that stand? Is this going to be addressed again at the next board meeting?
I would expect in some form it will be addressed and discussed at the next board meeting. I hope it's more along the lines of moving forward, mm-hmm. And what appetite is there on the board to look at this in a different way. You know, a lot of the concerns that the board brought up were, you know, a single partner, which I don't disagree with. I think that we could open it up to have multiple partners. You know, I think that we could look at that as an opportunity to provide more choice to families. So I'm hopeful that the conversation is moving in a direction of like, okay, what do we do moving forward? I think that everyone recognizes that there is a need, and how we provide that for students in a way that you know, respects the rights of parents, that respects the need that kids have in today's world, and hopefully getting to that space in the coming months. It's hard for me to say. I mean, it's not the administration's decision. This is a board decision. But my expectation would be that there will be conversations, and the hope would be the conversations about how do we move forward, tweaking some of the things that maybe we've used in the past.
It really seems to have devolved into a bit of a turf war in some cases among the various factions on the school board. One argument I've seen come up is that the board members who voted not to continue the relationship with Centerstone say, you know, we're being accused of pulling the plug on mental health. No. You know, look at how many employees of Hamilton County Schools are specifically assigned to mental health or counseling type issues. And the question that I usually come back with, you know, how much is enough? And who knows how much is enough? So I guess my question to you as superintendent would be, if moving forward, this decision is allowed to stand and you lose whatever access to additional help. I mean, the math in my head says that hurts students.
Yeah, I think that go back to the original part of what you were talking about, the narrative that's been created. I think that is it's created by social media, about where we are. It's created by us not being willing down to have conversations. I also don't think in situations like this that it this is where the sunshine law, in my opinion, hurts. Like, it's hard for the board to sit down and grapple with stuff like this in a way that isn't fully public. And I'm not saying that that should happen in all instances, right. But I think there are times that it is helpful over really tough conversations for the board to be able to grapple in a productive way and then go and publicly talk about, you know, decisions. But obviously we can't do that. Right. I've been pretty clear and consistent. And I would say this, honestly, like the entirety of my career, I'm here to support kids. I think that we have kids from across this county that are coming with a variety of needs. Some of those kids are coming with mental health needs. I'm also a supporter of parents being involved or guardians being involved. And so if we don't have, and counselors, social workers, the student support coaches, those are layers that we've added to improve counseling for students. What we're talking about with groups that are providing in-depth mental health supports and counseling outside of school through these partners, that's a different level, right? And it's not for every kid. It's a very small percentage of kids that need it, but the ones that need it really need it. And so what I would say is that while we have committed to supporting kids and we've committed a lot of money, and I hope that we continue to do that, we also need to understand that there is a group of kids that need more than what we're able to provide. And we should be doing that in partnership with families. Right now, families can still get these supports outside of school. Essentially, where we are right now is that the supports can't happen in school. But Centerstone can still see families in their home, in their offices. It just can't happen in our schools right now.
I just think back to my days in school when there were comparatively little or no resources available for kids who were troubled in some way. And, you know, having the benefit of looking back many years and all the way to the present, I just wonder sometimes how their lives could have been changed had this kind of help been available. So I just hope we don't go in reverse. That's a personal opinion there.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, I think that, you know, even 20 years ago, I would even say 15, there was a lot more stigma based to mental health, and it people that probably needed to get help that weren't getting it. But, and I think that's why you've seen an increase of people accessing this. The number one thing that kids were getting support for was anxiety.
Yeah.
It's not some extreme thing, but if you, kids are going through all kinds of stuff. Seniors right now trying to apply for college and get accepted to college, that is riddled with anxiety, right? And so it is, I think, important for us just to recognize that, 20, 30 years ago wasn't as much, even 10 years ago wasn't as much, but there's not the stigma around it like there was. And what kids are getting help for, some of it is very severe, but some of it is really specific to things like anxiety.
Good point. Cell phones. When we last spoke a few weeks ago, right before the beginning of school, that was a hot topic of the new cell phone policy. First question, I'm assuming that is in effect now.
October 1st.
Oh, October 1st. October 1st. Okay. So that's coming. Also, since we spoke, there was a hoax call at UTC, active shooter, which thankfully turned out to be untrue. And there have been others, of course, across the country, primarily at colleges. But I remember that day as we were covering it, so much of what was taking place on the UTC campus was, I suppose, the information that was getting out was aided by the fact that those students were on their cell phones. And they were able to tell their parents, their loved ones, whatever, you know, I'm in a safe place, everything's okay, we're doing what we're supposed to do. And a lot of people that day commented like, oh, so here we are talking about taking cell phones away from high school students and others, public school students, but yet it seemed to be an asset at UTC that day. So since that has taken place, and we are at the eve of a new policy, what are your thoughts on that now?
I think that's probably why the board ended up in a place where cell phones can still be with the kids. Has to be in a backpack, has to be, you know, in a purse, stowed away, turned off, you know, so that in the event something happening, they would still have access to it. And I think that that was an important moment. And again, a reminder of why all the steps that we take around safety are necessary. The cell phone policy, I think most schools that I've been in have already started implementing it in their own way. Essentially, what the policy says is from the first bell to the last bell, phones have to be stored away, silent, turned off, airplane mode, whatever it is, and we don't want to see or hear them, right? Happens one time, take it up, you have to contact the parent, get it back at the end of the day. After that, you know, it's hold it for 3 days, hold it for 5 days. There's more severe consequences. And so I think that in different ways, you're starting to see schools already move to it in preparation for October 1st. Now, we've got to do some communication with families. We need to do some communication with kids going into that date. But I met with principals yesterday, and I heard a lot of positives from them already about what they're seeing from kids, you know, interacting in a more positive way. Lunch seems to be a more joyful time for kids. And so hopefully there will be positives. I can't stress enough to families, though. Families have to talk to their kids and understand we're going to enforce this, and we're going to enforce it consistently. And so when a phone gets taken up, there's going to be a tendency to create some friction between the administration and the parents. We have to talk to the kids, parents and administrators, and let them understand that this is a policy. If your phone is out, it's going to get taken up. And that's what I worry about the most, is just that relationship strain that's going to happen between, you know, families, kids, and teachers and administrators.
And this might be a good time to remind people, you do have a tip line.
We do.
A confidential tip line, which I would assume is most often used to give you all a heads up. Hey, I saw something, I heard something. Tell me how that works and how it's working.
Yeah, the quick tip line's been in place for, I guess, about 8 years now, maybe a tad bit longer. It initially was put in place to report specifically around bullying, right? Now it's expanded, and you can report almost anything. If you've got a concern about, you know, maybe you're seeing something at a sports event where they're taking up money, and you've got concerns about the procedures for collecting, counting, and depositing that money, you could report it there. If you've got a concern about something on the grounds, maybe there's a fence that looks dangerous, people can report it there. So the quick tip line can be used for a variety of things. Every school on their website should have a link that is specific to that school. If you go to the district website, there's a link that you can scroll down and pick a school, or just send it to the district office. Sometimes it's a blessing and a curse, but see every one of those. Again, it can be used for a variety of things, but it is a great reminder, I think, especially after UTC. We need relationships with families and with the community where if something is happening, you know, speak up. And most of the time, that's what occurs. That if there is a concern, a student goes to a trusted adult, tells them, we're able to address it. But safety for our community is not just a responsibility of the school system. It's a responsibility of everybody.
The only criticism I've heard of the quick tip line is that, just hypothetically speaking, if I'm teaching science at XYZ High School, and for whatever reason, you know, I'm a hard teacher, or the kids don't like me, or whatever, it's not out of the realm of possibility that a kid can call the quick tip line and say, Mr. Carroll uses profanity in class constantly. He insults the students. He harasses people. And then it's your obligation to investigate me. Suddenly I'm on the defensive. They may have made it all up. How do you do that?
Yeah, I think administrators have gotten pretty good at knowing the difference between what is a real quick tip and what isn't. There was a period, it doesn't happen as much, that it would, I mean, kids would do it on each other, like just to get a laugh about me seeing you taken out of the classroom to get questioned by an administrator, that's happening less and less. But, you know, there are some abuses that can happen with the quick tip line of putting in false information or doing something to create, you know, a disruption for a classroom or for a teacher. But most of the time, administrators are pretty good at understanding it and being able to go to, you know, a teacher and say, you know, Mr. Carroll, just so you know, this came in. Anything going on here? And it's as simple as that.
You recently introduced an idea, I guess would be the best way to put it, a program that would provide some housing for Hamilton County School System employees. Tell me about that proposal and how it's being received.
Yeah. So what we're looking at is, and I talk about this from a retention and recruitment and retention standpoint, we've done a good job, but we are pulling every lever that we have. This is another lever that we think can help us situate Hamilton County schools in a way that we're more appealing to employees. And the reality is housing is expensive in Chattanooga. And so we started down this road with Chattanooga Neighborhood Enterprise, looking at existing properties to see if they could set aside, you know, 20, 30 units just for our employees. We ran into a number of issues with that, that it just would not work. And we found out in that conversation that one of the issues they have is finding land to put these buildings on. And so we went, looked at several of our properties, West 40th being the one that we're proposing. And to be clear, like I heard a lot of conversations about, like, if you can do this, well, why can't you give us a step increase? This isn't going to cost us any money. What we're essentially doing is renting the land or leasing the land to CNE, who would then build the buildings and be the manager of the property. At the end of that lease, the land and the buildings would go back to Hamilton County Schools. So it's literally $0 out of our pocket. I'm not on Facebook, but people tell me what's on Facebook. I would maybe recommend everybody to get off Facebook, but you know, saying things like we're trying to be landlord. That's the furthest thing from the truth. What we're trying to do is provide an opportunity for our employees that allows them to live in a clean, safe environment at a price that is less than what the going rate is. And hopefully we can get others to buy into it. I've talked to both mayors who think it's a great idea and are like, if we can do it again, maybe we include fire department, police department, first responders. But the attempt is to create another lever where we can recruit and retain the best teachers, you know, the best assistants, the best cafeteria workers that we can. And this benefit with the housing would be for all of those employees. It would be available to any full-time employee, teacher, assistant, school nutrition worker, any of those employees.
And we have time for one more question. And I'll ask you, I did receive the 20th day enrollment numbers. We talked about that last time, just in how that affects staffing, that sort of thing. This past Friday, I was at the kids' first coupon book kickoff at Daisy Elementary, and the principal informed me that they have a new staff member or two because their numbers are up. Countywide, what direction are we headed? Did you see anything that surprised you in a good way or a bad way?
Within, I think, 50 or 60 students of where we were last year. The projections in some places were closer than others. The only real surprising one was Howard was down more than we expected, which isn't, I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. I mean, that building we've been talking about for years was full. And so giving them a little relief is not necessarily a bad thing. What we're struggling with the most, and we just put this out right now, is we're pretty good in regular ed and pretty good in ENL. It's our ex-ed teachers, and specifically the ones that are serving classes like the IDS class, the DCC classes. And we just put out an incentive trying to recruit regular ed teachers to fill some of those spaces. It's not higher than what we typically have. If you remember the conversation about ex-ed last year when there was talk about reducing some positions. And I think I said this multiple times, we typically have, you know, anywhere from give or take around a dozen open positions in exceptional ed. Right now we've got 15. So it's not out of the ordinary, but it's the specific locations and classes that we're struggling with. And so we're putting out a special assignment bonus for regular ed teachers. If they're willing to do it, they'll get a $10,000 bonus, and we'll pay for them to get the certification through UTK.
Always a pleasure to talk to you on Real Talk. Let's do it again soon.
Absolutely. Thanks.